Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail. Ah, yeah, everyone. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. And guess what? I'm your guest, Dr. Pat, joining you live. We do it like a bunch of hours a week, and we are having a blast. Today must be kind of the show where it's incredible. You know, generally speaking, I rarely talk about spirituality more than twice a week because we have such a variety of shows that we do. As I said before, the Dr. Pat Show is talk radio to thrive by, and we will talk about everything from sex to spirituality, and actually some people don't think there's much difference. But today happens to be kind of an unusual day. Earlier in the day, I got to do a show called Bible Babble, and now I get to do a show with an amazing author. What if we're him? There's something going on here. The transformation of spirituality with my very special guest, Dr. Gene Pascucci, a metaphysician and, more importantly, has a very interesting background we're going to hear about. But he is someone that has been committed to solving one of humanity's most profound puzzles. How did we get separated from God in the first place? And beyond all of that, what does that separation mean? You know, this is not an indictment on any religion, Christianity, Catholicism, tonight at all. What we do on this show is to question and bring alternative possibilities. And that's why I love doing this. And that's why this amazing individual is joining us here on the show. What if we're him? There's something going on here, The Transformation of Spirituality. That's the book that Dr. Gene has put together. And, you know, the cover is very unique, which, of course, we'll talk about in a minute. But there's also some very interesting quotes and, more importantly, questions in this book. And so get ready to take a journey with us on what this was like for him to begin questioning at a very early age and to come to this place now where he is the author of What If We're Him. Dr. Gene, thank you so much for joining the show today. It's great to have you on.
Dr. Pat, thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you and be on your show.
So, you know, there's the obvious question that people, I get asked, probably ask you like a gazillion times, why did you write this book? What was the passion? But I'm going to ask you a different question.
Okay.
The question that I want to ask you is, you know, given your journey, given all that you've done, all that you've questioned, all that you are, what are some of the challenges and obstacles that you've had to overcome to bring you to this very moment?
Well, if I went a little bit linearly from the beginning, was just being a young boy. My parents moved from New York City to Reno, Nevada, and I found myself in a Catholic school. I was 6 years old. Some of the neighborhood kids talked me into breaking into a house and stealing some gum, and we were just learning about confession, so I felt like I was already a bad person. And in the meantime, my mother became very sick and went away to a hospital, and I thought that was my punishment for stealing the gum.
Yeah. You know, I had a very similar experience. At age 7, I was put into Catholic boarding school in New Jersey and wasn't the most obedient child, and while in Catholic boarding school, my mother died.
Oh,
and
God.
So guilt and shame and a whole bunch of other things, and why wasn't I a better child and all of that. But how do you deal with that as a young child? I mean, how did you deal with that?
It got more complex in terms of, you know, becoming a teenager and discovering my sexuality through some older teenage boys with masturbation, and then becoming a junior, senior in high school and discovering my sexuality again with a high school girl and going through, you know, discovering new words like fornication. And in my religion at the time, that wasn't acceptable. And then probably the most profound and most moving situation was her becoming pregnant. We drove to San Francisco. We had to make a decision whether we were going to have an abortion or try and have a baby. We were only 17 years old at the time, and we decided to do the abortion. And I went to San Francisco and we found an abortion clinic that fronted as an eye clinic. And when we went there, the nurse kind of told me to take off, and I went over to the zoo, and I was just in agony looking at all the baby animals, realizing I was destroying life. And at 17, to realize that quite potentially in my religion, I was a murderer. So it took quite a profound impact on me at that point to decide, do I deserve to still be on the planet? And the awakening was, who am I now? And I kind of went on a self-destructive mode at that point. I didn't deserve to be on the planet, but at the same time, I was too afraid to die and burn in a fiery hell, which, again, was part of my religion. I won't indict Catholicism. I think it's a beautiful thing. It was just my experience that I was going through at the time, and I had to make a decision whether to stay or go. And I think what happened at that point was a decision to say, there's something going on here. And even at a younger age, when I first was receiving the host, I remember choking on it. And I was only, 7, 8 years old, and I remember having this profound spiritual experience of projecting to the back of the church and feeling I couldn't touch the host in my throat. It was too sacred. And at the same time, I was choking. And I remember this epiphany of looking at this figure hanging on the wall bleeding, and the nuns and the priests and the garb and the whole sanctimonious thing going on, and thinking, there's something going on here. I want to figure out what's going on. I'm in a question. And again, at 18 was, I want to study everybody who knows what I think they most, what I most want to know. And that started that, progress to go forward.
So what I love about this, and what I love about you're talking about, is even though you ran into some challenges, let's call them paradoxes, contradictions in spirituality, religion, what you were being taught, it really did open the door for you to start questioning. And it sounds like you were really hungry to find out more.
I became an insatiable student. I really did. Yeah. I really became an insatiable student. I wanted to know everything about everything. And, my personality was shy. Even to be on the phone, there's a shyness to share something. And then I had everybody driving me saying, you need to share this. This is quite a moving story. And then I realized, too, I tried to write the book that if people wanted to read the book, that they could map their own experience, like you said, to lose your mother. Then what do you do with that? And who do you go to? And how do you find out? And I started to see something, that there really was truly a virgin birth of born into ignorance, not knowing who you are, not knowing how you got here. My parents are in their latter 80s, and I tease them now. I said, you're getting ready to leave, and you didn't tell me how I got here, what I'm supposed to be doing while I'm here, and then how do I get the heck out of here? And you're getting ready to leave. And so for me, the process was like, there really is something truly powerful going on. And I wanted to know from my own personal experience, and I was going to explore every avenue that I could. Leave no rock unturned.
And, this is really kind of interesting. We're having this conversation here. For those of you just tuning in, let me introduce you to my very special guest today, Dr. Jean Pascucci, joining me here on the show. The book is What If We're Him? What If We're Him? There's something going on here, the transformation of spirituality. I want to kind of start backwards, if I might, or forward. It depends on how you look at it. I want to start with the conversation about the transformation of spirituality. And obviously, by writing this book and by putting this in the title, there is a conversation that you've had with yourself and a shift in beliefs that really believes that we are going through a transformation of spirituality. And the word transformation and spirit aren't necessarily always the same. How would you depict this transformation that we're going through today, and what would you say are the reasons for it?
Well, I think we're ready for it, and I think we're exhausted with our media. There's kind of a circus going on. I went to India, in terms of seeking, there's so many things to talk about. I went to India in 1988 with three of my male friends. One of the things that was empowering to me was when I broke away from Catholicism, not because it was bad, just I wanted to explore more. I went to my parents and I said, I am tired of feeling so guilty. And so one of my friends had told me about transcendental meditation, Maharishi Mahesh Yogi with the Beatles in the 60s. We were in the early 70s at the time, and we wanted to go to India. So in 1988, we had the opportunity to go. Maharishi Mahesh Yogi was in Maharishi Nagar at the time. There was another holy man, very powerful, and if people want to look him up in the internet, I think he's fantastic, was Sai Baba in southern India, and we had an opportunity to see him. But one of the things that was really interesting, there was a little holy man staying in the ashram, and he invited us into this little area where he was. His mother was sitting on a small piece of carpet. She was in her 90s. He was in his 70s. The fascinating thing to me is in Hindi, she kept telling us to give us candy, and she was teasing. Here I am, a dentist. She didn't have any teeth. And I'm looking at him, and I said, what is it like for you to observe four Westerners coming to India? I'm 12,000 miles away from home, and I'm looking now back at home, but I'm also looking at India. What's it like for you? And he looked at me, and he said, cute voice, are you aware of the chakras? Well, people may have not heard of the chakras, C-H-A-K-R-A. the chakras are seven energy centers in the human spine. You have to remember, I'm a scientist and a dentist and a biologist. So the chakras is the endocrine system in the human body. He said, you live in the lower self. He said, you live in your bowel, your sexual organs, and your belly. You live in survival, sexuality, and power. He said, when you go home, pay attention to your commercials and your advertising. We didn't have internet yet, so he said, just look at magazines and notice the conversations about survival, sexuality, and power. He said, there's another whole place to move into, the heart chakra. Compassion and recognition that you are deity. I was turned on. That was it. Because as a little boy, that's what I thought. And I was told I couldn't believe that. I had it, me and God were separate. And here, the transformation to me was, who is this I am that I am that's speaking? Who am I talking to right now? Who are these listeners on the phone? Beyond an identity, beyond a name and a body and a gender, who am I present to? And in that moment, there's an epiphany, and it's extraordinary that there's something extraordinary going on, and there is something going on.
You know, there are a lot of things that people call this thing that's going on, and we're going to talk about this and much more, Dr. Jean, throughout the show today. Do you have a sense that people in general, and I don't like to generalize, but let's just call them people in general, have a sense that there's something going on? And then what would you point to that's showing up in the external environment to feed that, so to speak?
Well, I'm insatiable for information, and the internet's really interesting. Mm-hmm. We have a friend, Lee Carroll, who does the cryon channelings. Lee Clant said to me, in 1988, there was an astrological shift, a harmonic convergence. I'm like, Lee, I don't know what that means. He goes, I know. But as we discussed it, I saw something. There were three very tangible things that happened around 1988 that have transformed us as individuals. You know what they are? The cell phone. We didn't have a cell phone. Can you remember not having a cell phone? I remember that we had a party line when I was a kid, and you had to run down the street to tell somebody to get off so your mom could call your dad. Now, the other thing came out, personal computer. I bought my first computer in 1988. It had 35,000 megs, and it cost $5,000. It wouldn't hold the contents of my book. And
exactly.
The other thing that came out was the internet, access to the internet. To me, it was like God said, you guys asked for it, here it is, Toyota. You have access to everything. Look what's happened in 22 years in terms of our access to information. You know, President Obama keeps talking about transparency. And I'm excited because I think the transparency is going to expose media, it's going to expose money, it's going to expose energy. To me, that's the excitement of transformation and the empowerment of the individual. Now, are we ready for it as individuals? Not yet, really. I mean, I look at, you know, if you watch Fox News and MSNBC, diametrically opposed, kind of front of the hand, same, you know, front of the hand, back of the hand, same hand. But lots of problems, but no answers. I wanted to look at possibility, not hope. I don't know if there's hope. I can't put hope in a cup of water, but possibility. I think we're right on the edge of enormous possibility, and that's what I saw the transformation of spirituality. If we could empower ourselves as individuals, it's the sky's the limit again.
Well, you know, I want to go back in time for a little bit, and we're going to do this when we come back from break, because,
sure.
You know, let's take a look at Jesus for a minute. Didn't Jesus live in the world of possibility? And I want to get back to that when we come back from break. Because when I think about Jesus, and I'm like you, very early on, I got indoctrinated into, you know, the study of this man we now call Jesus. And in a large way, became completely fascinated with the world of possibility that he lived in. And at 7 years old, what else would you call that, really? But how does that translate to today? Why is it that we live in this world with this extraordinary teaching of possibility, and yet we limit ourselves so often? Well, we're going to talk to Dr. Jean when we come back about that. We're going to talk about his book. Very interesting cover on the book. What if we're him? Let's take a short break right here. You're listening to the Dr. Pat Show. And this is like broadcasting over the internet, which actually didn't exist when I did my first internet show. Let's take a short break. We'll be right back. Stay tuned, everybody.
Is your soul thirsty for love this Valentine's Day? Fill it up with Aqua Mantra's I Am Loved water and feel the love with every conscious sip. You attract love into your reality when you're overflowing with love from within. Pick up a case of Aqua Mantra's award-winning premium natural spring water that flows from the abundant streams of Mount Palomar, California. Now in our brand new biodegradable and recyclable bottles. On sale at aquamantra.com/I Am Loved. And know you are loved.
Are you concerned about a specific health issue? Do you want to know what causes it? Are you ready to tap into the inner wisdom of your body and listen to what it is telling you? It's a scientific fact that your health condition, present circumstance, and excess weight are not the result of your diet, exercise regime, or genetic makeup. Your thoughts, feelings, and emotions all directly and specifically influence all your body functions, including heart rate, digestion, and organs. Anger is stored in the liver, resentment is stored in the gallbladder, and lack of support shows up in your back. Our bodies give us clues to how we have been thinking, feeling, and acting. Dr. Cal specializes in interpreting these clues, ignites your inner healer, and guides you step by step to continuous, positive, and lasting health changes. When you change your mind, you change your life. Get in your driver's seat today. Visit AskDrKel.com. That's AskDrKel.com.
Ladies, are you living an inspired life? Do you yearn for a more passionate, dream-filled life? Here's Linda Joy, founder of Aspire Magazine, and she has a gift for you.
Aspire has launched its Mission to Inspire initiative with a commitment to give away 100,000 one-year digital subscriptions to women around the globe. Every subscription comes with a multitude of free gifts from our team inspiration partners.
To claim it all, go to AspireMag.net today. No purchase necessary. And live an inspired life.
Ready to manifest your heart's desire? Want to know the secret to navigating life's in-between times with confidence and skill? Ready, Set, Manifest with Life Coach Debbie Lacey offers real tools to coach yourself through the in-betweens and leaps in life. Say goodbye to being stuck and hello to Ready, Set, Manifest. Visit theinspiredcoach.com and join the next Ready, Set, Manifest telegathering. You're not lost. You're getting ready. Visit theinspiredcoach.com.
E-Cloth, the only cleaning solution you'll ever need. E-Cloth's fiber function does the cleaning, not a chemical reaction. Also, no paper towels or chemicals to buy, so you'll save lots of money. And E-Cloths are guaranteed to thoroughly clean for years, the whole time safer for you, your family, the environment, and saving you lots of money. As a Dr. Pat Show listener, get 20% off everything you order and free shipping. Go to ecloth.com, and when checking out, enter Dr. Pat. You'll never go back to cleaning any other way.
Reach your full potential and increase energy with the superfood of the Inca, Maca Magic. Maca naturally balances hormones, relieves symptoms of PMS, menopause, and erectile dysfunction. Maca increases energy, stamina, and endurance without caffeine. Visit macaroot.com. That's macaroot.com. Call 541-846-6222. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Neshama Living, where your optimal health begins with awareness, grows with knowledge, flourishes with proactive solutions, and is practiced as a way of life. Neshama Living is dedicated to wholeness of body, mind, and spirit. The Neshama Living Hour is coming to the Dr. Pat Show. Get ready to regain your natural balance. Take control of your health and vitality and build your foundation for wellness with Neshama Living on the Dr. Pat Show.
Remember, for our dogs and cats to live long and happy lives, just like people, they are what they eat. Wellness carefully selects wholesome ingredients to create food you can trust to provide the foundation of your pet's well-being. True wellness means every ingredient has a purpose in every recipe they make. You can trust the quality of all ingredients in wellness, from their source to your pet's bowl. Visit wellnesspetfood.com to find a pet specialty retailer near you. Wellness, natural food for pets, where true wellness begins.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back to the Dr. Pat Show. For more information about us, go to drpatlive.com or thedrpatshow.com. Joining me here today is, the author of the book. I've got it right here in front of me. What If We're Him? And thank you for, bringing Dr. Gene Pascucci our way. There's something going on here, the transformation of spirituality. This is not only a look at what Dr. Gene's journey was like, but really a journey that enabled him to ask questions like, what is God? Who am I? What am I here for? Now in this book, the question is, what if we're him? The transformation of spirituality. He gets to share guilt and confusion that dogged him throughout the Catholic Childhood and Beyond, and the extended process of spiritual transformation. He's joining us here today because he's sharing some of the things he's discovered. And most importantly, some of the questions that many of us have asked ourselves but have been afraid to ask ourselves openly. Dr. Jean, thank you for joining the show today. And I think what we're doing at the moment is, you know, we're kind of talking about this place of transformation and the transformation of spirituality. And I had an interesting conversation with someone today, and I asked the question, you know, are we truly moving to a place of greater consciousness, or are we simply going back in time and remember the greater consciousness we used to have? And I think that's an interesting question because it really taps into what we were saying before about living in a world of unlimited possibilities. And I actually referred to Jesus in terms of my relationship and really understanding the world of unlimited possibilities that he lived in. Do you see what I mean?
Yes. Well, thank you for the opportunity to speak, Pat. I enjoy that you're creating a voice for people who wouldn't have a voice otherwise. It's difficult to access the marketplace. And yet at the same time, I feel, as I'm going through my own experience in the last 2.5 years of putting this book together, of how many cool people there are on their planet. Quiet, serene, behind-the-scenes people that are making a huge difference, not caught up in the media, not access to the media, but your world with the Internet creating opportunities for people like me to come forward and speak. That's wonderful and it's fantastic, and I appreciate your work for that.
Oh, sure. I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled we can do what we do here.
So, well, you mentioned something about Jesus, and I did a search one time, and I'm a total information. I love information. I'm on the Internet all the time. I'm a junkie. I saw something really powerful. I looked at the name Jesus Christ. In French, je suis. Je suis as I am. And Christo means anointed. So je suis Christo is I am the anointed. And what I saw something is I thought, you know, there's no way to prove if this book's real. I don't have any way to prove that it's real. It's a wonderful story, and I love the story. You know, the Old Testament's kind of the setup, and then the New Testament's the opportunity for this being to come into presence. And what I saw was Catholicism for me is, I mean, we did the crucifixion and the passion of Christ. I mean, I was an altar boy when I was very, very young. I knew the Mass in Latin when I was 8, 9, 10 years old. And I remember just so many times standing before those individual 12 symbols and feeling so guilty that this being had suffered and gone through so much for us. And, you know, and I mean, it worked for a while. And then all of a sudden I just kind of fatigued of it. And I thought, what's the possibility that je suis Christo is that each one of us is a je suis Christo? Each one of us is an I am, and each one of us is an anointed. And I thought something, there's a little thing out of the book here, and I thought, you know, there was a crown of thorns placed on his head, and I thought, don't we all have a crown of thorns on our head as we go through the psychological pains and worries of everyday life? You know, your show's about health, body, sexuality, family, children, jobs, work, lives, death itself. It's not a simple task to be in a physical body in the earth plane. Then he carried a cross through Galilee. He literally weaved all through the town. There weren't very many people on the planet back then, not like today.
Right.
You know? And here he carried this emotional, spiritual life's cross that we all looking for meaning and purpose. And then I saw this physical body, he's about to die. He began to have his own awakening and revelation. And here he was, he came down, became a man, maybe forgot he was God. And he had this experience in a human life in a body, and now he's about to cross back over. And he cries out, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Maybe he forgot. And do we all not forget and become fearful when we're in our greatest moment of challenge in our life? And in the final moment, Christ the man reveals his love for humanity and the quest for experiencing human life and commits on the promise. And in the passion, in the moment of Passover, he utters, Father, forgive them for they know not what they do, for they have forgotten who they are. That's the distinction I've been in for a very long time. Did we just forget who we are?
Mm-hmm. And that's really what I was alluding to, you know, in an earlier conversation today, Dr. Jean. And that is, you know, there's a lot to be made right now about the rise in consciousness and the rise in awareness as if we've never been there. And this is a little bit where I get a little bit, let me just call it, I don't get testy, but I just wonder where this level of arrogance comes from to have us believe that we're now experiencing a rise of consciousness as if it didn't exist before. But let's take a walk back in time, if you and I could do that.
Sure.
You know, I mean, this is not a conversation for me about religion. This is a conversation about what people believed.
Right.
And if we go back in time, we go back to places where people had an enormous belief in the anticipated next step, the thing that they did not know about. And yet, whether you call them gods, goddesses, whatever that was, there was this notion that there was a power greater than themselves. Some people say that that's not necessarily a rise in consciousness, that we're on an evolution. And I wanted to ask you about that because you've studied this.
Well, I think for me, again, was looking at that chakras. When you look at, when you move into the heart chakra, mm-hmm. it's about compassion and recognition that your deity, it also mm-hmm. has to do with being moral and ethical and honest. We have a really difficult society right now that's completely out of control. Here's what I see, Pat, that's going to happen. There's a lot of noise about the 2012, the Mayan calendar. I think it's already happening in terms of the shift and the transformation of consciousness. And an awakening and an awareness into higher consciousness for each one of us individually. Now, we can study it. The thing that bothered me about church was I could never get there from there because I always had to feel bad and I was always guilty. And I thought, there's no opportunity out here. There's no possibility in this distinction that I can break through and say, but I think I'm him. There was a thing in the Bible that I was fascinated with where it said, be still and know that I am God. And I thought, that bothered me from when I was a teenager. And I have a cousin who's a very powerful minister. And we were in the discussion about it, and I said, if that was written semantically correct, it would have said, be still and know that God's God. It also said, there shall be no false gods before me. Again, semantically written correctly, there's no false gods before God. So what I saw was this enormous possibility. Can you stand in the responsibility? That's the terrifying part for everyone. What if you're him as a possibility? I wrote it as a supposition in the book, a question, an inquiry, just something to look and think, what if? And if you could stand in that what if, Werner Erhard is one of my heroes who did S and all the training.
Going to ask you about the chapter that you wrote about there's more to winning than meets the eye.
And who is this I? And who am I without the I? Who is anybody without their I? We're all the I am. It's a collective agreement. We see all the distinctions and the separateness. I see what's going on now culturally as you look around the world and there's all these little puddles of consciousness and we're all rising where we can peek over the top and we can see black and white and yellow and red. I've been a dentist for 30 years, 125,000 appointments. I have sat with everybody in my chair. Famous people have been there, people from bands. I live in Reno, so I've had some successful and famous people come through. One of my probably most profound and saddened things was a 12-year-old boy as a patient, and at 19 he was shackled to my chair because he had murdered his baby. And I was looking at him going, what happened? What happened? So the distinction was I began to see that everybody had something going on beyond their name and their gender and their identity. I had a really powerful experience, and you probably read it in a book. It was the day everyone turned into Christ in my practice. Mm-hmm. Pat, tomorrow morning, you're going to get online, and your show guy is going to come to you and say, listen, 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, you're interviewing Jesus Christ. How are you going to be tonight? How are you going to be tomorrow? Are you going to sleep well tonight? And when you wake up in the morning, are you going to shower longer? Are you going to put more perfume on? Are you going to wear nicer clothes, dress a little better? And what's that ride to work going to be like? And in my world, I have a little tiny office. I could see my front door, my receptionist, my operatory from my little office. And I had this vision that I heard this entity come in. My receptionist comes in and said, he's here. He's filling out the paperwork. My other assistant comes in and goes, he's in room one. He's waiting. My heart's pounding. What's it going to be like? And I get teary-eyed in this, charged emotionally. Can you imagine walking in the room and putting your hand out and looking in those eyes? And then the powerful epiphany came. Who am I not to treat everyone as that's who they are? And then what happens when you live in that domain, you shift everyone who comes within your sphere of influence. Because they can't be anything but what you're holding them to be. There's so many powerful experiences that have happened over their 30 years in that practice. I'm 4 inches from their face, and I'm looking in their eyes, and I'm doing some pretty tedious, intricate, difficult things. I have to hold face, because, there's some things that aren't happy for them and easy for me to do. And then there's this powerful distinction of realizing I'm in their energy. I had to do an enormous amount of psychological work around realizing I was an empath and I would pick up all their energy. I knew everything that was going on in their life. It was fascinating, but I was literally inside their physical space. And then it was enormous because it was like they were all me. They were all an I am. They were worried about the same things I'm worried about. Worried about our government, worried about our country, worried about money, worried about their family, their health. All those distinctions, all playing out all the time for every single person. Drive down the road and get your attention off yourself. And if you're in traffic, what if every one of those people, they're all IMs, they're all worried like you and I are. They're all trying to get home, they're all worried about their family, they're worried about money. And then I saw a really powerful distinction. Each one of us, all we want is an experience. We're in this earth plane. All we want is X past, parry around N's essence. We just want the essence of having been here. And if we could break that separation, that's what's killing us. You know what I mean? We're at war with one another because we don't see the who we are. I get wound up in this conversation.
Well,
it's such an empowering thing to live in.
You know, let's talk about this and let's go back to, you know, the conversation about, you know, that many people have. And actually, there are some folks that are very confused right now and looking for answers. I mean, you know, there is one of the first scriptures, one of the first things that I learned about, and honestly, I don't know where I learned this. I think I learned this at a very young age. I think I had an aunt that would say these things. I can't actually remember them.
Right.
To be
they're there,
fact.
Though. They're present and they're real for you.
They're real for me. But one of the things I remember was, you know, the conversation and the question about greater things than these.
Yes.
You know, we shall do, he shall do, you shall do. And
right.
The question now in if you go and you look at this, people are saying, well, maybe Jesus didn't mean that. Maybe Jesus didn't mean greater things than these, meaning greater things than I'm doing, you shall do. That's blasphemy. But is it really, Gene?
I don't think so. Because the reality for me is if we could open to the small possibility, I know it's going to drive people crazy. If you can open to the possibility that you're something more extraordinary than you ever knew, and you stand in that possibility. You know, the thing that started happening for me writing the book was I started having epiphanies, and the more open I got, the more things opened up, and I found myself in really interesting places, and things started to happen where I realized I can never be the same. You can never be the same when those things happen. So are we doing greater things than Christ? I mean, the poor guy had a donkey and fished, and here we are connected at a level with millions of people, billions of people. We're almost 7 billion people. I mean, I look at the possibility that creation and spirit is in terms of how many possibilities there are when you have 7 billion people. I mean, I don't know if we can get into this conversation. I was looking at the sexuality piece, and I saw you in the interview in the beginning when you said you can't tell the difference between spirituality and sexuality. And I speak at the university here for the human sexuality class every time they do the thing on spirituality and sexuality. And what I saw was this enormous, fantastic possibility. Can you imagine there's 350 to 500 million sperm in one ejaculation? One man can populate the earth in a week. Can you imagine there's that much possibility in one human, and there's 7 billion. So I looked at it and I thought, isn't it interesting too, by design, I saw this, that if a man and woman spend time together and they both allow themselves to experience one another and in the same moment experience the orgasm, what happens? Everything drops. There's no identity. There's no man. There's no woman. There's just one pure being, union, communion. That's the true communion, right? One voice. And then I saw this wonderful distinction as a biologist that in that moment we create the possibility for another being to come into the game. How exquisite is that? And then I saw a really powerful thing. I know you said something about the cover of the book, and if you want to get into it, it'd fit right now.
Well, yeah, let's talk about the cover of the book, because I think there, you know, it's fascinating.
Well, there's several elements. And I was tried to talk me out of it.
Let's describe it for our listeners.
Well, what I kept seeing is a lot of my work happens at night in a, like almost like vision quests, and I try and stay asleep with a yellow pad by the bed, and what I'll do is jot things as it comes in. I started having really powerful dream states, and I had a wonderful friend who said, he's a very metaphysical being from Germany, and he said, start journaling this because it's very powerful information. So I started seeing the cover of the book because the title was always there, What If We're Him, What If We're Him? It was always permeating me. And so my mother gave my father, my dad's 87. He's had several strokes. He's in a rest home. He's by my sister, and we go and visit him, and he's wonderful. His mind's still sharp. He's getting a little Alzheimer's. So my mother gave a picture to him of a picture done in 1940 by Werner Salmon. It's the most famous Catholic picture of Christ. My mom gave it to him to carry in his wallet. And I remember I always honored that picture. We also had it in our house. So that I kept seeing that picture. On the flip side, I kept seeing another face. As it turned out, one of my friends who worked on all my computer work married a woman from Romania. She had 5 degrees and was working for $100 a month in a library in Romania. And he brought her to the United States. And her forte was photography. And I said, do you think you could capture my face asking that question? And she says, what are you trying to do? And I said, remember a Cracker Jack's box when you could flip the little thing, the toy in the bottom, and the cow would jump over the moon kind of thing? I said, I want to create a lenticular image on the cover of the book, and I want to take these two faces, and I want them to morph back and forth into one another. And so she figured it out, and we found a company that could do it. And it was called Virtual Images in California. So we took the two images of the pictures. What we put in the backdrop of the of the photograph is there's a picture of the sun, and the sun is connecting the two foreheads, the third eye, and then it's also connecting in the ocean. What I saw, my best friend's wife died of pancreatic cancer, and he and I went to Mexico together to just escape his insanity. Mm. And while we were down there, we played golf, and we were on a golf course, and I walked over to the ocean, and there was the water was really crashing up, and the light was really, really bright, and had multiple groups in front of us, so we had about 20 minutes before we were going to hit the ball. And I'm staring at the ocean, and all of a sudden, here's this sunlight penetrating the earth, and it is so bright, and it's at an angle. You know when the sun's so bright it makes your eyes hurt? It was mm-hmm. that bright. It made yeah. my eyes water. And I'm sitting there, and again, remember, this is a scientist and a biologist and a dentist, and then there's the mystical spiritual piece. I saw this matriculation of energy of the sun penetrating the earth. Almost, you know, I mean, it was like there was this giant phallic symbol penetrating the water. And in the moment, all of a sudden, creation came, and I just saw everything evolve right out of that moment, and then it ran down the water into my legs. It almost knocked me to the ground. I started to cry. My friend came over. He said, "What happened?" And I said, "I don't know if I could explain it to you what just happened." And I said, "But I saw something. I saw the sun as pater, as light, father. And I saw the earth as mother. We call Mother Earth mater. As a chemist in biology and chemistry, mater, the elements, mater, carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, this gets into the physical component of it. I saw that mother has the ability to take the elementals of the earth and put it into her womb and create the possibility for a breathing apparatus, a physical body. And I saw the light energy, the sun penetrating as father consciousness. And you matriculate those two energies and you have this enormous miracle right in front of you." And I sat there and I wept. I weep as I talk this to you, to stand in that empowerment and to see that. And then he said, "What made you cry?" I said, "It's always been there, and I just noticed. I've taken it for granted. What an enormous gift that we're standing in front of." And I know we have the carnival act going on with media and all that. It's fun. It's fun to be on the planet. Right now it's serious because there's things that are being abused and we're not able to manage it appropriately. And I saw that when you and I talked. How do we move into that heart chakra? My dream for 2012 is the awakening that we move into the heart chakra. Compassion, recognition that we're deity. That as an awakening. When that awakening occurs, there's nothing to compare to it. You can never be the same. And that's what I thought. A powerful distinction when I wrote the book is that we are not separate. We are this entity. We're the essence. Each one of us individually. I went to Sai Baba in 1988, like I talked.
Yeah.
We were there for a week. What really got me is he pops out of the ashram. All the women are on the right side. All the men are on the left. You wait to go in. When we were there, there's 200,000 people there around Christmas time. When we were there, there was about 5,000. It was in late January, early February. The women get the inside of the ashram grounds like a baseball infield. It's perfect. And he'll pop out. Little teeny guy, 5'2", saffron gown, Freddie Fender hairdo, you know, afro. The Hindus literally treat him as an avatar, as a god incarnate. And they'll capture his aura and wipe it on themselves. When he walks by, they'll gather the sand. If you get on the internet, they'll say he's a fraud and a fake and all that. I didn't experience that. The last day that we were there, I grabbed my camera and I was going to go into the ashram ground. He had a big Sikh bodyguard and he grabbed me. He said, "I'm sorry, you can't go in because he doesn't want you to disrupt all the devotees." He said, "But if you want, you can take a picture from the outside wall." It was a scalloped wall about 4 foot tall. So I'm leaning on top of the wall. I've got an old regular film camera and I'm fiddling around with the film, and he came out, and Baba would stand with his hand, they call it a mudra, it looks like he's asking you a question, what, so his right hand would be raised. He looked down the barrel of that camera, and I had a samadhi experience. It's a moment where you completely lose yourself. I couldn't tell if I was him or me. It was probably a minute in infinity. It seemed like it lasted forever. For 17 hours on the ride home, I kept thinking, what would happen, what happened? Before I had left, I had watched a videotape. He said, "If you come to see me, it's because you think I know something you most want to know." My question was, how do we become separate from God? For 4 months, he appeared in a dream, holding the mudra. The energy would come into the room almost like a power transformer. You know what a power transformer out in the street? There he'd be standing in the dream. And he kept asking me the question, what's the possibility that each one of us individually is an expression of this being experiencing itself? I'm standing in my bedroom right now, right where he would appear. It blew me away. It took me 4 months. When I got it again, I wept and I thought, that's what you most wanted to know. You're not separate. No one's separate. Now there's this distinction. Do I keep that private, quiet to myself, or do you write a book and take it to the world and share it and let everybody think you're nuts? Paramahansa Yogananda said, you'll seek your answers, you'll climb to the highest mountain. you'll find the answer, you'll come down and want to share it with everyone. They know what you're talking about, and you're going to think you're crazy. And I've thought I've been crazy going through this process. But I can't be the same, Pat, since this all happened. It's a transformation. There was something going on. We weren't separate. You're not separate from me right through this phone conversation. The people listening aren't separate. And we're so hungry for to know that. We don't want to be separate anymore.
You know, it's really interesting because, you know, many people listening to the conversation would have an opinion about, first of all, your book, about what you're saying, about what it means. But there are two things that I'm really struck by here, Dr. Jean. You know, one is, of course, you mentioned a lot of people, if you go on the Internet, thought that Sai Baba was a fake. If the Internet existed during the time of Jesus, you would probably find the same.
Yeah.
And it's not just Jesus. Let's talk about them all. I mean, it could be Buddha. It could be any number of people that have come through, have made a spiritual impression on people of this earth, whether it's Allah. It doesn't matter. But there are questions and considerations that all of us get to make. That's what I love about us as a species. Really, I love it. I mean, I get to decide what's right for me. You get to decide. People all over the world have a way to decide.
Yes.
And I'll tell you what I'm really struck by. There's a book out right now, and I know you know this book. But it really is, for me, it's a departure from what people might call mainstream Christianity, although I think the author would argue with me. And it's a book called It's Your Time by Joel Osteen. Are you familiar with Joel at all?
Yes.
Yeah. Very
wonderful
interesting.
Speaker.
Exactly. What do you think of Joel Osteen? Have you ever watched him whether you watch him on TV or on his website? Have you heard his message, Gene?
You know, I am aware of him, and I haven't had as much time to put into him as much as I have other people.
Just give you an idea, and this really is going to back. This is going to go back to what you actually started to talk about and what you've just said here recently. You know, when you pick up a book or you listen to a minister of one of the largest churches in the country.
The country, right.
Exactly. I mean, it's crazy if you take a look at his practice, his church, and what he's built. But then you kind of look at his ministry. And the book that he writes, It's Your Time, and it's Activate Your Faith and so forth. He goes on, Achieve Your Dreams and Increase in God's Favor. So this is not a book about if you do this, you will die in hell. This is a book about possibilities. This is why I'm bringing it up. Because it brings us back to the possibility. And so one of the chapters in the book says, God remembers you. But the question then becomes, why do we forget God so easily?
I saw something really powerful that, you know, the Pope just came out. They came out with new sins. You know, sins against nature. They don't want the stem cell. Ridiculous wealth is one. And I almost saw it as a distraction. I saw there's one sin. And for me, there's only one sin now. It's forgetting who you are. And there's only one absolution. It's remembering who you are. It's us remembering who we are collectively. Mm-hmm. And my dream right now is that's going to happen in our lifetime. I think that's why those of us who are here want to see it happen. We want to experience it. You know, this thing with greed, the banking, all these things that have happened, it's kind of the end of an old energy. And you can tell it's a little bit terrified because I think it knows it's ending. I think we're going to see through all of it. I think it was the whole purpose of the Internet. Everything's available. I mean, from the worst of the worst to the best of the best is on there. What's your attention on and what do you want to experience? So for me, the real challenge is that we've grown up with a stigma that we can't, you know, have you ever seen yourself? You've never seen yourself. If you look in a mirror, it's a reverse image. Left is left and left's right and right's left. If you see yourself on a piece of paper. So I'm experiencing myself now through you and the listeners. Am I appropriate? And am I accurate or I'm just sharing? And so my fascination is, what's available to us between right now and the next, say, 3 to 5 years? Because we're into some dire straits as far as humanity goes. You know, take a lounge chair tonight and go sit outside. Nature's perfect. It really is. Look at the astrology. Scorpius comes out, and where I'm in Reno, Nevada, so Scorpius comes out this time of year. Orion just kind of disappeared. It's all perfect. This is the time of year where it's 90 degrees here. Nature's fine. It's humanity's a little goofy. And I think we're trying to find our way. And hopefully people like you at the show, people like Osteen, all of us are trying to make some sort of a difference and a contribution. And for me, I'm really in the mode of I don't want to be separate any longer, and that's my challenge. That's all I study, and that's all I'm looking at. Every single person you come in contact with is extraordinary, and they just maybe they forgot. And maybe that's our responsibility to remind them. I'll share a really interesting story. We have time to share this one little thing.
Absolutely, yes.
We were trying to start a hygiene school here in Reno, and there was a problem. Vegas was exploded at the time, and we had a hygiene school there. And the president of our dental society said to me, why don't you write a letter and just see what's going on and see if you can spearhead a little committee. So I wrote, and they had a problem. You know, they couldn't take any of the kids from the north. And we had all of our kids here complaining, going, I'm taking all the credits. I can't get in. So me and a friend started a hygiene school. The community college called me one day and said, we won a national award for starting this school because we raised $500,000, and the committee in Washington, D.C., this watch group, wants to know how you guys did it. So do you want to go back and speak before this group of people? Well, it was a very powerful, elite, wealthy group of people. So I was pretty anxious because I'm not a thespian by any means. You probably can tell by our interview. But here's what was fascinating. I went to do that, and I always had a dream to go to Washington, D.C. I mean, here I'm an American. I had never been there. Pat, this is extraordinary. I think everybody needs to know this. I went into the center of the rotunda. The rotunda connects the Senate, the House of Representatives. Center building. In the center of that floor is a little tiny white stone, and I stood on the stone. I'll probably lose it emotionally right now to explain it. I stood on the stone, and I got a rush of energy. I felt my father's energy in World War II, and all my uncles. I have 10 uncles. All those guys went and fought in that war for my freedom, and now I'm standing there. My tears are streaming down my face, and you're looking at George Washington and all these characters. I had my head back, and I'm looking at the ceiling, and all of a sudden I look at the ceiling, and I thought I didn't know what was up there. There's a painting there. Done by an Italian. You and I are Italian. Brumidi. Alexander Brumidi. The title, when I came home, I had to look up what the picture was. It's called The Apotheosis of George Washington. Theos is God. Apotheo, to become one with God. George Washington is sitting on that ceiling, sitting at a small dress, a desk, dressed in a purple gown with a rainbow beneath his feet, surrounded by 13 maidens, and he's surrounded by the allegories of life, war, agriculture, mercantile. Then between that and the very dead center is a small cloud pattern. And I went, oh, my God, this is a portal. And you know what's on top? I think it's Sacagawea. It's the statue of freedom. Freedom and liberation from the physical life. So the other thing that's really fascinating, that building is a representation of St. Peter's Basilica. Below that little white stone is George Washington's grave. But he's not buried there. He went out the apotheosis. He went out through the statue of freedom. The United States Capitol is a sacred chapel. That's extraordinary.
And, you know, and this is really, again, you know, what we're talking about is having that discovery. What you discovered, you know how many people have probably walked through there and have never made that discovery?
Never knew it. And I figure some of those characters that are right now would want to paint the ceiling.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't think they'd want to paint it purple. I think you're right.
But it's amazing the mythology that's in there.
They wanted to hang the purple. What do you call that? Teletubby.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I want to acknowledge a man named William Henry, because when I came home, I discovered William Henry, who's done an enormous amount of research on this. And
yeah.
The book, he is so powerful. And I mean, that's where I discovered a lot of this information. Because when I stood there, I thought, my God, I just went back here to do an acceptance thing and tell these people how we had raised money for our school. And all of a sudden that happened. And it was so profound and so powerful. And that's what I was telling you. All of a sudden, as your eyes open and you awaken, you start seeing things you never saw before, and then you realize the whole thing. I almost feel like we reverse engineer consciousness. There's two births. There's a birth of ignorance. You come in and you're hoping somebody will feed you and change your diaper. And then I saw there really is possibly this virgin birth. There's no sex involved. It's an awakening. Mm-hmm. The awakening is you become aware of who you are. It's not male or female. It's not based in gender. It's based in consciousness and awakening and an awareness. It's huge. And I feel like we're right on the threshold of that happening. Then I feel spiritually committed. I mean, you know, I sit here and I write this book and I sit in my room here, and there's the days I think I'm a total nutcase and I shouldn't do this. And then there's the days I have an opportunity to speak with you and I get so charged and excited because I feel like you and I are becoming the elders.
Yeah, that's the truth. But I want to talk about another elder right now, because I think there's a phenomenon I want you to comment on. And I mentioned it earlier today, but I really didn't understand the impact of what I said until later. I want to talk about James Cameron. I want to talk about the man that was behind the movie Avatar.
Yes.
And the reason I want to talk about this is because we talk about how divided we are around spirituality, around religion, around values, and yet millions of people flock to see this movie that is about as spiritual as it gets and about as connected to the mother figure in spirituality. And I want to ask you, how do we explain that?
Well, you know, the movie's Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Avatar, the word Avatar means a God incarnate.
Mm-hmm.
A God incarnate. Harry Palmer, who does the Avatar courses in Florida, Stars Edge International, went and took all of his courses. He's out of Scientology.
Yep.
Harry captured me when his first conversation. He said, "We're all avatars, just no one has told us." Yes, that's what I thought all along, but I had all these people tell me I couldn't believe that since I was little. You know, as I told my friends, somebody wrote on my hard drive, and I can't find the delete key, but I've been trying to learn how to write over it. Right? And I'm not begrudging it. I realize that in order to have the human experience, you have to forget who you are. And then then we spend the rest of the time trying to remember.
Mm-hmm.
What an extraordinary, you know, it's a conundrum. We're our own enigma. What I loved about Cameron goes back to Titanic. Nobody really remembers the last scene. Nobody remembers the last scene of the movie. Last scene of the movie is we think the old lady throws the necklace in the water. But if you remember, there's a sheer scene where Jack comes down the steps with Kate. She comes down to greet him, and then she takes him up the top of the stairs, like walking up to heaven. And all the characters there, and they all applaud. Cameron's brilliant. Cameron is probably one of the best poets in our society today. Modern type of poetry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They totally honor the guy. I mean, it's one of those people you hope you get to meet someday because of just who he is. And, I mean, even in the same movie with Avatar, you know, what's missing for me is a feminine energy. It's been male-dominated for way too long. I think men, it'd be great if men became more feminine and women became a little more masculine to stand up and hold the power. I love that all the women are running for Congress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's an empowering because I think here's my distinction, and it may not be accurate. I'm always working on a piece. I'm looking at men live and think and women live and feel. You know, I had the opportunity to go meet David Hawkins in Sedona. What a beautiful soul. 84. He's an enlightened being.
Wow.
We were there for 2 minutes. I waited at the end of the line just to go up and say, "Can I look in your face?" And he said, "What?" And I said, "Can I look in your face?" It was interesting to drop into a sea of consciousness. And he hit me on the arm and he gave me a hug, and like we both knew. You know, and he made the distinction. He goes, "You know, once you step out of this physical body, you go, what the heck were we putting up with all that nonsense for? It's fun to be here. It's fun to be here, but it'd be a lot more fun if we remember. Because then we're going to stop hurting one another."
Well, and isn't that the message of your book, really?
Yes.
I mean, and it's exactly like, I mean, you know, whether it's Joel Osteen or whether it's, you know, my guest today, and I want to make sure everybody has the website. You know, my guest today joining me, Dr. Jean Pascucci, the book is What If We're Him? And the website is whatifwerehim.com. I want to make sure that you all know that. www.whatifwerehim.com.
Do we need to make a distinction, Dr. Pat? It's W-E-R-E because the Internet doesn't like apostrophes. So it's just
W-E-R-E. They cannot stand apostrophe. HTML code does not like apostrophe. And you know, this has been I want to thank you for joining me here today. And as we get ready to wrap up, I want to go back to the remembering part because I think that it's a great message for all of us to be on the airwaves to say, look, let's all remember. Let's all remember kindness. Let's all remember compassion. Let's all remember love. And then we get in our busy day.
Yes.
And the question, and I guess the last question I want to ask you today is, what is at risk if we don't remember, Gene?
I think it's suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we're doing. We're suffering. Because no one, you know, my impression is we're not allowed to know. And then I realize the virgin birth is you have to find out and remember for yourself. And you remember for yourself, it's transformation. There were some things that came across. There's an art piece of art that I had in my house, and I had to find the woman to see if I could use it. It had been there for 15 years hanging on my wall. At 12 o'clock midnight on a Friday, I'm doing a Google search looking for this photograph. And the woman's name was Ann Roth, and she's in her 70s now. And she has a website called whereangelsdwell.com.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "I want to know why you want to use this picture." It's on the back of the book.
Yes.
And it showed a being. And we were in a course where the woman said to us, I want you to envision a being of light. And then what I want you to envision is a ball of light. And in that ball of light, you're handing your most greatest desires to your future self. And Anne was so cool to allow me to use the picture. She's a beautiful soul, and I love her work. But what happened is there's a quote. And what came to me was, the awakening occurs in a moment. And when it does, one sense of God becomes a sense of one's own conscious presence. And when that happens, you can never be the same. There's nothing to compare, Pat, to the empirical awakening that God is our own conscious presence. And when we make that, we're going to transform this planet. It's going to be what we always hoped it would be. And it's going to have the potential to go back to where it was and what we wandered away from. And now we're going to go back. That's my hope. That's my dream. That's my work. It's my mission.
Gene,
it's my passion.
Wow. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for being just an incredible catalyst for all of us to start asking more questions and to remember who we truly are. Let's make sure we give out the website again and let folks know how they can get a copy of the book.
Okay. The website's www.whatifwerehim.com, W-E-R-E. You go on the website, you can even order the book from there. You can go on Amazon if you want. It's on there as well. And I hope you'll get on the website. There's blogging. You can email me. You can talk to me. I'm very available. And so the same as my wife. So I really appreciate the opportunity, Dr. Pat, to do this. And
well,
thank
we
you
really
for making,
appreciate
thank you for
you
creating a voice. Thank you for creating a place for us to have a voice.
I appreciate that as well. We have the most incredible listeners on the planet. And I want to thank all of them right now for tuning us in and turning us on each and every day. And many of you are right on top of it when we don't get those archives up in time. So we're doing a much better job. Thank you all for supporting the Dr. Pat Show, for supporting our guests, for supporting the many people that are out there claiming their birthright, and that is the divinity of voice. And so until next time, all of you, please remember who you are. Remember the brilliance. Remember the joy. Remember the power. Remember the compassion. And remember the love. It's your birthright. We'll see you next time on the Dr. Pat Show.